It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a sign of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We could leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies. Feline, with a death wish. Be right, didn't help. No name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Welcome into the show. We'll get to what happened out at Daikin last night. One of our local teams agreed to a big contract with a star player. Not the one that's been the main focus of conversation in the summer, but that happened. We'll talk about that too. But because of what happened during the break, I got to start the show a bit offbeat. Speaking of offbeat, do we have a new challenger, a worthy challenger to collect his firearms in their commercials? I had not heard what Nick Rancuso is up to until like 4 minutes ago with his ode to Nick's place with the, you know, there's Nick, his vocals are up in the mix, certainly. And you've got the guitar, a little more down than you might want in a, you know, if this was going to be part of an album, but Nick's out there telling you about Nick's place. Sean, it's a bit of an earworm for Sean because he has sung this song when he's not here. Yeah. I had not heard the commercial at all until about 4 minutes ago now. Lance hadn't heard it. He walked by. I was like, what is that? And then we told him it's Nick singing about Nick's place and his unending rivalry with the Maris Barbecue, which sponsors News of the Weird. So it's interesting. That commercial came on
A segment
sponsored by Damaris. So, what do you think, Sean? Collector's Firearms has a certain je ne sais quoi about
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But I think if I'm just ranking them as, maybe it's recency bias. But hearing Nick, the dulcet tones of Nick Rancuso, I gotta think that for all of these commercials with original songs in them.
Yes.
I think I'm going to go with Nick as the leader.
Yes. I can provide some background information, too. I was here when he and his son laid down the track.
Okay.
His son was on guitar.
So Michael was the one who mixed that?
Yes.
I got some questions about Michael's right mix. There.
And believe it or not, I could hear it from where I'm sitting right now during the Rich Eisen show. And one take from Nick.
It's like Jay-Z.
Yeah, he just got in there, got in the booth.
Look, I got to record. I'm not going to be singing. I got to record a commercial for a new client that's joining the station here. It won't be anything like what Nick provided, and it's mostly just a compliment to Nick. I don't got that in me.
Yeah.
I don't have that creativity, and also Nick owns the place, so he can do whatever he wants in the commercial. I don't have that capability. I do. Yes, I am like part of a pop group from like the 2000s, where they write the music, they write the songs. I just do what they want me to do. Nick's a singer songwriter type.
Yeah,
he gets to do whatever he wants, and that's why I think we've got a real contender for taking over the top spot as far as original songs and commercials. You'll hear it again.
Yeah,
if you haven't.
There needs to be some replayability, I'd say.
And I think I've only heard it once, so I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I think Nick's got some replayability.
Yeah.
Shout out to Nick Rancuso.
I think we'll be there, or at least the afternoon show will be there next week.
Yeah. Speaking Wednesday. Of remotes, we're going to be, all of us will be at East River 9 tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, yes. The shows will.
The shows will be. Some people may not make it out there for reasons like Sean. Sean won't be out there, but we will have a 12-3 show. Out there.
Yes.
So Rich Eisen won't be heard. We'll have a live local show out there. The lineup changes a little bit, but the shows that you hear every day will be the same. John Lance, then myself, and then certainly Jeremy and Joe, too. But we'll have a little 12-3
show as well.
Will Kunkel in the middle.
Will Kunkel will be out there at East River Nine.
He'll kick it with Kunkel.
Is there a golf tournament that I don't know about? That's a major. I'm sure there's a golf tournament, but as far as a major, no, right?
The Tour Championship was last week.
Because normally we go out there, but maybe that's why we're out there this week, because we were at Golden Nugget last week.
Ah.
So maybe that's, I don't know how that plays out. I'm just making guesses here. But yeah, we're at East River Nine tomorrow. So if you got the chance to come out and join us, and KJ, if you're listening, I got your shirt. He missed out on his chance to get himself a Columbia Blue ESPN 975 shirt when we were at the party. So if he wants to get that shirt in quick fashion, he can come out there and join us if he so chooses. All right, to the news of last night. The Astros get the win, so they got a chance to take the series today. It'll be an afternoon start. Chicago's got to get out of here to go on about their business. But Wesneski did a really nice job. That's a big-time performance for him. And they needed it because the bats were relatively silent up until, I'm not going to call him a hero. He hasn't done enough to have that little song sounder played for him. That still remains an Alexander original, although it's a Foo Fighters song, but you get the point. But Velasquez is rising up the charts of guys who we don't know much about contributing to winning baseball. That's now two game-winning hits in the span of what? The series? Right? It was game one where he hit the home run, and then the Astros tacked on, I think, maybe a run, but he was the one who gave them the lead in game one of the series, and he does it again last night in a scoreless ball game, comes through, and the Astros take another one against the White Sox. Hader came out and did his thing in the top of the ninth, just shut the White Sox down. So you get another win. The Rangers lose, so your lead is back to two in the AOS. But to Wesneski, whether this is something that leads to him being a part of the rotation next year, 2028, whatever, whenever baseball's back after the season, that was good to see from him. I don't know how much pressure he feels in the middle of a division title chase in early September, but every outing going forward until this thing is wrapped up, it's going to be turned up, the pressure on these guys, and a lot of these guys haven't done anything like this before. If you start to look at the rotation, which we've talked about, well, we talk about it all the time, honestly, because of its volatility. There are not a lot of guys pitching for the Astros down the stretch who know anything about pressure, at least pitching in the major leagues with pressure. You've got Christian Javier and Hunter Brown. They've done it. And Javier, we're almost there by default, really. But guys like Lambert, Wesneski, and whoever they find to fill out that other spot, whether it be a reliever who starts or an Ethan Pecco, whatever. Those guys, I don't know. They don't know what this is like. And Wesneski getting his first taste of being a real contributor to a division chase, that was impressive last night. And shout out to AJ Blueball as well, who got himself in a little trouble, but found a way to pitch out of it. Got the double play, and it was much like in basketball where you blow a layup and then the team goes down and knocks down a three. That's what the White Sox did. They had first and third with no outs, did not score, and the Astros responded in the bottom half of that inning with the Velasquez hit. So it looked like after Wesneski did his thing that game was going to get away from them because of the early trouble in that inning for Blue Ball. But he found a way. He made the pitch he needed to make to get that double play. And also, I know, I get it. You run on contact, but I forgot which White Sox it was. They're all pretty anonymous to me, honestly. Oh, look, you wear that uniform and your team is surprised. But knowing faces or numbers, not going to be my thing. He ran on contact and was easily thrown out. And then Blue Ball got the double play to end the inning. So maybe a little discretion, but hey, we'll take it. You want to make a base running blunder? We appreciate it. And then the Astros were able to take advantage in the bottom half of the inning with the Velasquez single that scored Paredes and Altuve. Do we believe Altuve was being slick, or did he just misplay that ball?
If it's anyone other than Altuve, I think it's a misplay. With Altuve, there is like the I don't know, 5,000 IQ play that he tries to do every once in a while. That
sometimes it goes poorly.
Sometimes backfires.
Yeah.
But sometimes he does, like, tag up and score on a ball that's barely hit out the infield just because he catches him napping.
That's true.
I think it was a misplay. It looked like a misplay. He played it off like it's a misplay incredibly well.
Yeah. He goes, hey, I'm a wild card out here. You just never know what's going to happen.
He is the ultimate wild card.
Yeah.
He is a very wild card player. But I don't know. I feel like it would look more obvious if he went to, like, because you still have to get in front of it to knock it down. You can't let it go past you. So I don't know. I think misplay and then quick reaction, quick thinking. Get back into the play, make the smart play. But I don't know if it was premeditated in the like quarter of a second he has to get ready.
I want to give him the credit, but I'm with you. I don't know, but it worked out. It worked out for the Astros. Worked out for Altuve. Got those 12.
Either way, it's either quick thinking before, like as the ball's hit, to be like,
or after the
ball hits the ground, to be like, oh, boom, boom, boom. Like,
true.
Either way, it is a good play, but I just don't think it was premeditated. Maybe I'm wrong.
We'll take it from Altuve, and it certainly helped to keep the White Sox scoreless as the Astros won that one 2-0 today. At 1:10, that start time,
we already have the lineup out.
You got Hunter Brown and Luis Castillo on the other side, who's not pitched well for the White Sox this year. But as we know, the Astros lineup, it doesn't really matter whether a guy has a history of pitching well in the season. You just never know how it's going to go. But yeah, the lineup is out. Is Velasquez starting?
No Velasquez.
Okay. Well, we just got to hold him off until we need him most.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's what he's about. Late inning heroics from Velasquez. The last couple of wins for the Astros, and well, they're the last two wins, and they helped them at least split the series, and they try to win it today, this afternoon, against the Chicago White Sox. All right, so nice win, nice to gain more ground. The Mariners won, but they're kind of not completely in the distance, still in the rearview mirror, but less concerned about them until you have to play them and two of your final six games, which we talked about yesterday. The Mariners and then the Athletics are how the Astros close out the season. And got some good teams in between. We'll see if those two teams are – well, we know the A's will be playing spoiler. That's all they'll have to play for. We'll see if the Mariners at that point will only be around to mess up the Astros season, or will they have something to shoot for as well. All right, we'll go to break with that. So we'll get to the news that broke right before the John and Lance show ended. The Rockets secure another one of their young players. And while this one got plenty more money than the others as far as annual salary, they still didn't give him the full max because that's how they operate. We'll talk about the Rockets making some news when we come back.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5.
In a Zimba building.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
One thing that's a definite when it comes to the Rockets and signing their young players, they will negotiate. So the max money that Amen could have received from the Rockets was a five-year, $250-plus million deal. Look, Amen won't ever be crying poor again. And if he does ever do one of those podcasts where he talks about, hey, guys, you don't really understand. Some of it goes to my agent. I got to buy a house. I got to buy a car for this person. Look, you've got a twin brother who's going to make like $160 million. You guys could figure it out. So Amen, least of all, should have a conversation about how money doesn't go as far as you think it should, particularly because no state tax. Heard that about Quinn Ewers earlier from Chase Danny.
Well, you actually get taxed on every city that you play in. So it is noted.
Look, you can split the expenses for the family and what they need and people you love because you got a brother who's in line to make less, which may be a point of conversation in the family, but make less than you, but still a lot of money. So Amen gets a 5-year, $208 million extension from the Rockets. And as the Rockets' best young player, it makes sense. Like, we know Alpi got his in 2024. It was 5 years, 185. Jalen Green's no longer here, but he got his. Tari got his, much to his chagrin as far as the value of it, at least if you go by that one tweet before the news broke. And then Jabari got his money too, which were all considered, when you compare it to what a max extension would be, team-friendly deals. Amen, it's hard to say a 5-year, $208 million deal is team-friendly, but it is less value than what he could have gotten if he and his representative pushed for a max and the Rockets said, that's what you deserve. But he's locked in. As this core has developed and gotten older, we've gone from multiple guys who are considered untouchable to just one. Amen Thompson is the one. And he gets paid as such if you compare it to what the other guys got. And he maybe didn't develop like some people want it because the jump shot is still questionable. He is not a guy they put the ball in his hands in the same way you thought would have been the case because of the conversations about whether he would be a point guard or not here. Right now he's a wing, and it may always stay that way. And certainly with Fred VanVleet with the ball in his hands and Kevin Durant with the ball in his hands, Amen's not going to get the same opportunities to be a offense initiator. We see it occasionally. They'll spread the floor and let him go one-on-one if they think he has a favorable matchup. But for the most part, he's a finisher, not an initiator, and, of course, a great defender. And the Rockets reward him for what he is right now. And credit to Amen. Is he going to year four now? Yeah, right. Year four now for him. After the first 3 years have been good, the team has been good since he's been here. And the hope is that they take that step with him now locked in to go from 50-win team who can't get out of the first round to 50-plus win team who now is a real contender. Because you can't say you're one if you're losing in the first round year after year, and particularly the way you've done it, banged up old Warriors team you lose to, which just seems like Rockets' destiny to lose to the Warriors in the playoffs, and then the Laker team, who was really compromised, and so are you with Kevin Durant missing the majority of that series. So that was a series you were expected to win, and you didn't do it. That's got to change. And we're a long way away from a potential matchup with whoever, but I don't care who it is, honestly. As long as you're not a 7 or an 8 seed, which would likely have you playing the Thunder and the Spurs in round one, this is the year. All the losing from the previous seasons and the development of your players, the trades you've made, as long as health is reasonable, you can't be flaming out in the first round again. There's a lot of money, even with all the negotiating, devoted to young players who are supposed to be getting you over the hump alongside Kevin Durant. But the good news is, if you like this roster and your young players, they're all locked in. There are levels to it, but you got them all in. The only one who left was Jalen Green, and that's because you wanted to trade for Kevin Durant. Now, the next young player is Reed Sheppard, who at this point is more in line with the Tari deal than a Jabari, Alperen, and definitely not Amen deal. So it's a big year for Reed for multiple reasons as he tries to solidify himself as a rotation piece, certainly. And can Reed Sheppard go from being, oh, okay, he has his moments, to being a guy who, as Draymond Green would say, is a 16-game guy, which is the number of wins you need for the playoffs? Can he be a guy you depend on when you're deep into a playoff series and into a playoff run? That's I would imagine, part of the goal for him, other than certainly getting better. Eric wants to join us. If you want to follow him, the number is 713-780-3776. What's up, Eric?
Yeah, I was talking about the commercials. Yeah, the Collective Firearms and the other ones that just came on this morning, man, they're both corny. The GOAT is Heritage Adult Films, because he does adult films for people who want adult films to be their old adult films to get new again. So you'll need to play more of that. And also, what's the likelihood of Kevin Durant going to the Celtics? I'll hang up and listen.
Did he not ask that question earlier this week?
I
think he
some
did.
Some variant of it.
Yeah. I don't know. What Earth's 616 variant, whatever. Just, I feel like I've heard that question earlier this week.
We've heard some version of that question.
Get Kevin Durant out of my city.
Since
the trade, honestly.
Yeah, like 10 months.
Yeah. Eric, I will say the percentage is very low that Kevin Durant, forget about specifically going to the Celtics, just being traded, and then you throw in a specific team. The question for me, Eric, next time I'm going to put you to the test. Who do you want from the Celtics? They're not giving you Tatum.
Paul George. Boom. Wow. All your problems are solved if you trade Kevin Durant for Paul George.
It depends on which problems you think you have.
Look how it worked for the Thunder.
If you want, if you think your highest paid player plays too much, then bring in Paul George. If that's your problem, if you think that's a problem, bring in Paul George.
The worst guy who plays.
That problem is fixed. He's no longer will the older player be your best player, and the guy you bring in doesn't play as much. If that's the problem you're trying to fix, then you're right. Problem solved. Any other thing you think can be fixed by Paul George, you're going to have to convince me. What problems does Paul George solve for any team? Unless you need to reach the salary floor.
How much does Baylor Shireman make?
He can't make very much. Now, as you try to put a deal together, I'm going to go to break. Sean will come back with a Paul George for Kevin Durant deal, including, wait a minute. So Baylor Shireman wasn't untouchable. What if the Rockets asked for Hugo Gonzalez?
Oh.
Then the trade's off, right? The Celtics
Brad
wouldn't.
Stevens tell you'll bleep yourself.
The Celtics wouldn't trade, wouldn't get in really seriously on Giannis because Hugo Gonzalez would have had to have been part of the trade. An older player like Kevin Durant, and you got to throw in Hugo, who averaged like 4.5 points per game last year. I don't see it. So the Rockets are going to have to ask for like Jordan Walsh or something to get that deal done. Maybe he's overvalued by Brad Stevens too. All right, we'll go to break. Sean's going to put together a fake trade, I guess, because Eric thinks Kevin Durant could be going to Boston. Okay. I don't know that Kevin Durant would want to go to Boston, but in Eric's world, it won't matter what he wants. He just gets out of his city. When we come back, we'll hear from the Texans head coach. He talked about several things in his media availability this week. We'll hear from also Kayshawn Booty. His comments, or at least his response to what Mike Vrabel said after the Patriots made that trade. And the bigger things from it were, if we're healthy, he's probably not active because we got guys and he doesn't play special teams. So from what I could tell, Kayshawn Booty's a pretty well thought out individual. He analyzes things, he analyzes questions he hears and gives a reasonable, logical answer. So we'll hear from him on that, and also D'Amico on why he's so protective of his players. We make the jokes here. It really stems from Joe Mixon when D'Amico said, "You guys don't really care about Joe." Well, D'Amico's going to tell you why he shows so much care for his players. We'll hear from both those guys when we come back.
Do you have the ESPN Houston app? Download it now in your app store.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
You ready for tonight, Sean? Dion headed to Atlanta, Colorado, and Georgia Tech. That'll be on ESPN tonight as the college football weekend begins.
I know we talked about this before. That's at Georgia Tech, like at their stadium, not at Mercedes-Benz,
are they
right?
Putting that in Mercedes? No, yeah, it's at Bobby Dodd's.
Okay.
Their home building.
Okay.
They didn't move that. Maybe Colorado with Shador and Travis Hunter, it might get moved. It might have got moved to, because Georgia Tech has been willing to do that in the past.
Yeah, I was also thinking, you know, the Atlanta connection, Deion's the Falcons
connection.
Yeah.
Less interest in Colorado than there has been in the past. So that'll just be on campus. That'll kick off at 7 a.m. So the Texans' best offensive lineman, I guess I have to describe him that way. Keelan Rose, his former, or I guess he'll always be a rambling wreck of Georgia Tech. The Yellow Jackets host the Colorado Buffaloes to kick off the College Football Weekend. You got games with top 25 teams. Missouri plays today in Utah. The first game without Kyle Whittingham since when? What, since 2005? How long was he there? Did he take over right after Urban Meyer left?
Yeah, I don't think they, or maybe like an interim or something, but I don't think they had a coach in between Meyer and Whittingham.
So Urban Meyer took over at Florida in 2005. So 20 years or so with Kyle Whittingham as the head coach there, and now it'll be Morgan Scalley, who was an assistant on the staff and was long suspected to be the head coach when Whittingham left. Yep. From 05 to 25, Kyle Whittingham was there. And now they start anew because Kyle Whittingham's at Michigan. We'll get to the D'Amico stuff, but this conversation came up this morning because Lance threw Sark in the top five coaches in college football conversation. I think it stemmed from something Brooks Austin said. He's, for people who don't know, he's another of the guys who've kind of gained some fame because, well, he's a film guy, but he'll talk about the sport with opinions as well. And he's on Twitter and YouTube. He has film breakdowns, so he's gained some fame, particularly during the playoff runs or the playoffs of last year. People started to pay attention to him quite a bit more. So he brought that up about where guys rank. I think he might have had Sark outside the top five. He said he wasn't top five coach, maybe. If you think about it, who are the definitive guys? You would say, okay, if you won a national title, you go in the top five. But Dabo's lost top five status, even though he has multiple national titles.
Yeah.
Kirby's thrown in there.
I think Kirby and Cignetti.
Cignetti's definitely.
1-2.
Cignetti has risen very high. If you don't think he's won, you probably at least are going to give him top three as it stands now. Because when you do that at Indiana, you're just going to raise your acclaim. And then Dan Lanning is always mentioned there, although the playoff flameouts, if he does it again, that happens again where you're not even competitive, people might change their opinion. Because, sure, it's not all about making the playoff, but when you start talking about guys in the top five, that becomes a huge part of the conversation. I threw Whittingham ahead of Sark because of what he did at a place where there's just a certain cap to what you're capable of. You win two Pac-12 titles at Utah. Now, this was a Pac-12 that was weakened. It was at the very end of Oregon and USC's tenure, but even USC wasn't, although I think Utah beat them in a Pac-12 title game. USC was hiring Lincoln Riley because of the mess they had created for themselves, and they weren't running at full strength. And if you take anything into looking anything into that fourth quarter against San Jose State, perhaps that defense still isn't where it needs to be. But we'll see what he does at Michigan, but just off of tenure and doing more with what you perceive as less in Salt Lake, I think I got to throw Kyle Whittingham in that conversation. And Sark, what he's done over the last three seasons, particularly the two seasons previous to last year, you elevate yourself. Because before then, it was about, hey, are you going to stop losing five-plus games or four-plus games a year when you complete a season? Because I believe before the run with Quinn that ended in the playoff semifinal against Washington, he hadn't coached a full season where he had lost less than four games. There was a season where he got fired after being 3-2 from USC, but there were some questions about could Sark put it all together, and he has certainly done that. I'm just not going to use three seasons to jump him up there. But but he keeps doing what he's doing. He's gonna be considered unquestionably a top five coach.
Yeah, it's like the upside part of the resume that he has in those 3 years. It's like when you actually are putting him up against, like, you know, Lanning, Kiffin, or whatever. It's like, oh, that is better. That the 3 year peak is better than those guys. But yeah, it is also tough to be like, yep, top five. Say it with my chest. You know, like it just does feel like, and it's because of Nick Saban and Urban Meyer have walked away in the last whatever decade, but it does like feel a little bit lighter. And Dabo has lost esteem over the last 5 years, where it does, like, the number three, it's tough.
Yeah, yeah. You could make a case depending on where your allegiances lies. Like, even for a couple guys,
like Ryan Day.
Ryan Day needs to be in the mix. You win a national title. Yes, understood.
But it's tough to be like, yep, third best coach in college football, Ryan Day. A guy who would have gotten fired if he didn't win that national title.
Yeah, and yes, Jim Harbaugh. He was born on third base, as you said, taking over at Ohio State from Urban Meyer. There were some definite advantages. He is not a program builder. We don't know. We know he's a program maintainer. I don't know that Ohio State's – yeah, they won a national title. I don't know if they at their peak under Ryan Day were better than they were under Urban Meyer. But he has done a good job maintaining. But as you mentioned, he was a national title runaway because he had lost to Michigan again from possibly getting fired. But
Davis Warren, Michigan.
Davis Warren coaching – excuse me, the quarterback of a Stanford team Miami has to face tomorrow. So we'll see. We'll see if Cristobal can lose to a Davis Warren Stanford.
Oh, Cristobal –
he needs another run.
Yeah, maybe not top five, but he's in that mix.
He's got a couple 10-win seasons at Miami in a row, but in the playoff run removed some of the questions, but the playoff run had to take the place of the two mind-numbing losses that nearly kept him out of the playoff during the regular season. So I think he needs one more run and maybe a clean season where if you lose a game, it's the Notre Dame on the road, to remove all doubt about where the Miami program is. And if you go deep into the playoff again, then you can start having those conversations about him too as one of the best five coaches in the country. But it is a list that can fluctuate depending on how the season goes. A guy who never coached in college football, but he is probably on most people's list at least the top eight coach in the NFL. I don't know how often those lists are made. It's mostly in a college football thing where they talk about this, because the quarterback determines a lot about how your coach is viewed. But D'Amico is one of those guys who people have a pretty clear belief in. And he's a bit of a show-me guy with his offense. We'll hear from him on that right now, because there are a lot of questions about the offense and what they've done and who they can be. What does D'Amico Ryans think of all the talk?
We have to go out and show it. Like, I'm one who's, we don't have to keep talking about what we're going to do or what do I think, or who we're going to be as a team, what we're going to do. There's nothing to talk about in my mind. It's a matter of us showing. Showing is the proof. And that's what we have to go out and show it, and people will see it.
The Texans are the team expected to win the AFC South. The odds say, or the books say that. But the ceiling, or at least what they believe the ceiling is, goes beyond that. And I think after a long offseason, coming off an awful playoff loss, he is of the right mindset. He's going to have to talk. That's his job. It's NFL mandated. But if no one ever asked D'Amico Ryans again about the expectations for his team, I'm like, you know what? Great. The season will tell us who they are. And they got a big challenge opening up with the Bills, who rightfully so, people feel confident in winning that game, because they always beat the Bills here, and they torture Josh Allen every time he's here in RG/Reliant. I wouldn't just assume it'll happen again, but I get why you have that confidence. Until Josh Allen and the Bills prove that they can handle that Texans defense in that building, You should feel pretty confident. We'll see if Joe Brady is a difference maker now that he is the head coach and not just the OC. Or maybe the Bills fans and Bills media will come to appreciate Sean McDermott if things don't go smoothly early for the Bills. If it happens in Houston, it's just more of the same. So I wouldn't draw any conclusions on Joe Brady if the Texans win that game, because it doesn't matter who the Bills coach is when Josh Allen walks into Houston.
Especially because he has been the offensive coordinator
for some of those struggles, yeah.
And what's held them back in this game is that
the offense.
It's the worst game that Josh Allen played.
The defense has been good enough, although they have lost talent and they were getting worse under Sean McDermott. The defense was good enough to beat the Texans in those games. The offense just simply wasn't good enough, and we'll see if anything's changed with now they have, DJ Moore at wide receiver. Still have James Cook, who always a threat. We will hear from someone the Texans hope is a threat when we come back. Kayshawn Booty answers some questions. One of the ones that got a very, very thoughtful answer from him was the question about Mike Vrabel's comments. We'll play that from Booty when we come back. If you want to join us, the number 713-780-3776. And we'll also get into the other big news in the NBA. The Clippers got punished. And really, the fans got punished. Like, Steve Ballmer can't go to games for a year. But when you are a fan base of a team that not only is a second team in the city, but for the most part, unless you're like 20 years old, your franchise, because of the Lob City era and the Kawhi era, which didn't end in what you wanted, but at least you were a team that people talked about in a way that wasn't insulting.
In the mix.
You're in the mix every year.
In the mix.
You know, there might be a joke here or there about Kawhi not playing, Paul George, all that, playoff P, all that stuff, but at least people talked about you. If you're older than about 25 to 30 years old, your Clipper fandom is plenty of misery. And the dark days have returned. We'll talk about that after we hear from D'Amico Ryans when we come back.
ESPN. 97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, it's the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Sean, I know you don't like traveling down 45 South, but tonight, the Santa Mark in my area is celebrating the 25th anniversary of the Fast and the Furious. Now, it's only going to be shown at 10:40, the one showing, but it's a celebration of 25 years of family and Coronas and a little bit of barbecue at the end of a movie.
Family meal. Yeah. Two family meals, one at the beginning, one at the end, every movie.
Yes, it's part of the lore. So for anyone out there who was thinking, hey, how do I commemorate 25 years of The Fast and the Furious? Well, there is a showing of it down in my neck of the woods.
Make a pilgrimage.
Yeah, well, you would consider it a pilgrimage. And not your own version of the Odyssey going down 45 South in the Webster. But I will not be there. And I bring up the movie stuff because it reminds me that Michael Carroll will join us tomorrow at 11:30. To tell you what you should or shouldn't watch. I wonder what Heath will tell us about Onslaught, which is the horror shoot 'em up military movie with a woman who people think is going to be Wonder Woman. You would have seen her in The Hitman, right? Or was that called something else? Or was it with Glenn Powell?
That was The Hitman. I get that and the killer mixed up.
Argia
Arjona.
Yeah. People think she may be the new Wonder Woman. At least she will be in the DCU in some way, shape, or form. So
she will be in the next Superman movie.
Yeah, we just don't know who she will be. But Onslaught is something I've seen a trailer for, which I thought was interesting. I don't see a review of it, which may tell us something, because normally when a movie is going to come out tomorrow, we would have reviews of it. But I don't see any of that anywhere. We'll see about that. Maybe Michael will have some for us tomorrow.
I was trying.
Oh, there it is. Okay. I've seen some stuff.
I was trying to think of a segue of, like, you know, who else will be holding off all reviews until the last minute, the Texans offense.
So Rotten Tomatoes has it at 74%, so not bad. Oh. Certainly much better than Gal Gadot, the previous Wonder Woman's movie, The Runner, that got 9%.
Yeah, that's 65% difference.
Wow. She is known. The internet has turned her into, I don't know if she's really awful as an actor. I just know every time I get on the algorithm, there's someone impersonating her and doing a poor acting job. They're not poorly acting as her. No. They're being bad actors and saying they're her.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Which is tough. It's tough when you, like, the top of the world, you're Wonder Woman, and the first one, at least, was pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. The first one was good.
Number two with Kristen, what's her name? SNL. I forgot her last name now. She played a cheetah type character.
Kristen Wiig.
Yeah, Kristen Wiig. Not good. Wonder Woman 2, 84. Not good. No. And it's been downhill ever since for the former darling of Zack Snyder, Gal Gadot. So if you want to see The Runner, don't. Is what the reviews are saying. Go see the potential new Wonder Woman in Onslaught in theaters, I think starting tonight. But let's hear from Kayshawn Boutte. There's no segue I wanted to try. So we're just
the new wonder for the Texans offense.
Don't like it. That's why I didn't try it.
Go out to see him.
And well, two Sundays from today. Yeah. As he and the Texans will host the Bills. Kayshawn Boutte is a Texan for a couple reasons. Jaden Higgins gets hurt. There were no real viable answers to replace him on the roster. And also, he was deemed expendable by the Patriots. Romeo Doubs, A.J. Brown brought in. Also, they like Pop Douglas in the slot, and that's not really what Boutte plays. And he also isn't really a special teams guy. So the Patriots deemed him expendable. There are the quotes from Mike Vrabel saying he probably wouldn't be active as long as we're healthy in that room. Here is Kayshawn Boutte answering, or at least being asked about those comments, and here is his answer.
Obviously, we know the Texans are a tough team. Last year with the Patriots coming in.
Sorry, Sean. It should be on the computer. You can just cue it up from our computer. That comment you heard was about what he thinks of the Texans. He's impressed by what he's seen so far from his new teammates. You know, he played against them last year in the AFC divisional round. And he scored a touchdown against Derek Stingley on a great catch down the sideline. It kind of put the game away, if I remember correctly. But now that he's with his new teammates, he's impressed with them, happy to be here. I think he mentioned Swarm in some of his comments. So he's at least seen it on the wall in the facility and knows what it is. But here is Boutte on the comments from Mike Vrabel.
You know, they did pay two guys to come in and do that job. Sadly, it is the way it is, you know, being that it's a contract year for me, I seek the bigger role. I feel like what Vrabe said in his media interview, it wasn't nothing bad. I wouldn't say I used that as fuel, you know. At the end of the day, he sat down. It was an honest opinion. He sat down, talked, speak his truth, and pretty much moved forward from it.
Yeah, he mentioned sitting down with Vrabel, and they had an honest conversation about what it was going to be. So he was in the mind to move someplace else, and the Texans got that done. And we'll see where he lines up on the outside, but is he a guy who is sharing snaps with Xavier Hutchinson, or does he take the number two, or at least a wide receiver two job, and that's just his? And while we have a couple guys ahead of him, we believe as far as guys who will get the targets in Nico Collins and also Dalton Schultz, if they could find anything, any juice from wide receiver two, whether it be 40 catches, but you're doing it at the clip he was doing it with the Patriots where he was like nearly 16 yards per catch, great. I've talked about it quite a bit. I don't see a lot of juice on offense. And Higgins was thought to maybe be able to provide it. And while Boutte is not a burner, he had the ability to make big plays in New England. We just need one guy beyond the two we expect to be main contributors to help out this offense. It was a little bit of a point of contention this morning with Lance because he didn't want to hear about the Texans being anywhere near competent offensively last year. And understand that the running game, honestly, trash. It was not good.
Yeah.
It was a bad running game. CJ's numbers, when he was on the field, analytically, probably better than you think. You know, the Texans offense, that was one of the issues this morning. The Texans scored, or at least their points per game were where they were 13th in the league. Lance dug deep because, you know, he's a numbers guy. He'll tell you that. Offensively, they're like 21st. If you exclude what the defense provided points-wise, they were 21st offensively, which is bottom half of the league, nearly bottom third. So not good. That's not good enough. So beyond the extremes of CJ's worst games, the Texans as a whole offensively weren't championship level. If they got there, it would have been clearly on the backs of a defense who carried them there. And we kind of expect that this year too, but can we get
near competence?
Can we get competence? I'm not asking for great.
Yeah, near competence.
I don't think they're capable of great. Can we get near competence? Can you be across the board about the 16th best offense in football across the board? All the numbers average out where you're not dipping into the mid-20s. You're not dipping into even into 21, 22. Can I look at you and go, okay, 16, 15, 14, 17, something like that. You can be considered a top half of the league offense across the board. And barring an implosion in an important game, that should be good enough to at least be a real challenge for a Super Bowl. Now, game to game, random game in January against whoever, that game may not go your way.
Cold night in Philadelphia in January, right? Is that when they play?
Well, that's the regular season, sure.
Yeah.
But even in the postseason, who knows where you might wind up in a game, and it may not go your way. Maybe the Ravens put it all together, and you have to go to Baltimore for a playoff game. Or
Denver, yeah.
Denver, or maybe it's finally Josh Allen's turn to have you in Buffalo. I don't know.
Nah.
Not worried about that bedpan stadium, right? Doesn't have the luster
of
the past stadium. Won't even know what's going on. Can't even boo you.
There's somehow a column in front of every seat in that stadium.
If you don't know, there was some consternation because some of the views were kind of obstructed. Like there is a glass protective barrier for people to walk up into the seats that's obstructing some of the views. I mean, you just look through the glass, so it's a little extra work.
Yeah, but there's also like a handrail.
The handrail that might affect you. Maybe someone walking by you during an important play because they're coming up the steps. All the things that are champagne problems. But if you build a new stadium and you are a fan who bought a season ticket, you would hope not to deal with it. But hey, you also live in Buffalo, so you deal with trials and tribulations all the time. You're used to things not going the best.
Blue collar.
You live in Buffalo. Deal with it. And besides, you're not hosting any important games there anyway. Don't worry about it, Buffalo fans. You'll be on the road anyway. Nah, I'm just talking. I don't know. Who knows? They're going to be pretty good.
A bit. Like for the, big, oh my God, Josh Allen needs help.
Yeah, he never.
Even more help than the leading rusher in the league.
They're never they don't ever have a title game at home. Right?
One of the Chiefs' loss have to have been at home. But
no.
Really?
They lost to the Bengals at home in a playoff game. But they've always gone to Kansas City, I believe. Right?
I
know they had Baltimore at home where Mark Andrews screwed up. That was at home. Did they lose to the Chiefs at home? I feel like that one's always on the road. And, you know, they lost to Denver on the road last year. They've had their opportunities. No, they did lose to the Chiefs at home because they finally got home field advantage, I think. And then they didn't even get to the AFC title
game. Yeah, because there's a year where the Chiefs didn't have home field, so they went to
Buffalo, then Baltimore.
Yeah,
they finally got the Chiefs at home and still lost.
The Chiefs had their run of like, no, we'll beat you this way too.
Hey, don't worry about it. I know you guys have this. It's like the Pacers back when they were playing the Heat. The Pacers put everything on. We want home court, so we don't have to go there. Then Heat just beat them in six.
Yeah.
Oh, no, they beat them. No, they beat them in six, so they didn't even have to deal with home court in Indiana in a game seven. So Buffalo's kind of the Indiana Pacers from that era, that 2011 to 2014 era of NBA basketball where there's just someone always in their way. Fortunately for Buffalo Bills, they didn't break apart after another crushing loss in the playoffs. They got rid of their coach. They got rid of their Frank Vogel, but kept everybody else. So we'll see, for the most part. So we'll see if Buffalo has any answers. And their campaign gets started at the same time the Texans do, and in the same building in a couple weeks now, at least a couple Sundays from now. We'll go to break. Hour one is done. If you want to join us for hour two, the number is 713-780-3776. We've mentioned basketball off and on. Well, one of the biggest stories of the day broke yesterday. The Clippers get punished for their actions. We'll run down what they are, what the punishments are, and ask a question. At least I'm asking it right now. Worst team to root for the last 25 years, considering what they thought they could be and what they actually are. Maybe 25 is too long, because back in the 2000s, they were terrible. But if you think about the last 15 years, living up to expectations, the Clippers are one of those teams who certainly didn't. And now it feels like any expectations they have just got buried under Adam Silver's punishment. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.